It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Megan Harris. All Pennsylvania schools are closed through at least March 27th to slow the spread of the new coronavirus. But for the region's largest district, Pittsburgh Public Schools, the work continues. Superintendent Anthony Hamlet joins us from his home. Dr. Hamlet, thank you for making time.
Thank you for having us on. We appreciate it.
As superintendent of the second largest district in the state, were you given any opportunity to weigh in before the governor made his decision to close all the schools?
Earlier that morning, AIU3 put together a Zoom conference for all the superintendents in the AIU3 in the region, and we're part of AIU3. And on that Zoom call, you know, we all expressed concern about having a unified approach, because at that time, there was no unified approach or call from the governor. So as a region, AIU3 region, our superintendents had already said, we're going to be out of school. But we had planned to have a phase, in particular to Pittsburgh Public Schools, we had planned to have a phased approach, meaning have students stay home on this Monday and Tuesday, have teachers and other employees come to work as we begin to prepare at-home work packets for students, have the students come back on Wednesday for a half day, collect their materials, their home assignments, and other pertinent information they received, and then everyone would go home during a half day. And that was going to be the start of our 2 weeks out. But the governor made a call immediately, so we had to change plans and pivot. As I've been saying all along since this began, this is a fluid situation that changes at any minute, at any hour, at any given day, based on the information that is handed down from us, from the CDC, health department, from the governor, et cetera. So we have to be, as an organization, ready to pivot on a moment's notice and change plans if need be.
So those plans escalated a little quicker than you anticipated. What are you hearing so far from parents, students, teachers? What's the word?
The word is positive right now. We're doing the best we can under the circumstances. And, of course, everyone is happy that we were able to provide food in all of our 60 centers, our schools and centers, for our students. And that's something that was paramount and number one on my list, because we know we have a lot of our students who are in poverty and rely on the school food every day.
That's all 54 schools, two alternative centers, and I think three standalone early childhood education centers?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so we figure that at those 60 sites or so, a student will be able to go to any school, not the school that they're assigned to, but their neighborhood school, what's closest to them, and be able to get a grab-and-go meal, a couple of meals for the day.
Is that a difficult balancing act from where you sit? Providing that food, it's super necessary, but also having people, you know, physically come together to pick up that food, to distribute it.
Yeah, that's the other thing. As we begin to monitor the mandates that come down from the state and federal government, like say, for instance, 10 workers now. So we had more than 10 workers in our food facility preparing food. And so now how do we begin to change and pivot on that and make sure the food is ready on time? And so those are things on the back end that, you know, people normally wouldn't think about, but those are the details, the minute details that we have to worry about to make sure that this food is provided to our students in an expeditious manner.
Dr. Hamlet, you're dealing with about 23,000 students, more than 4,000 employees, lots of different locations. Will these 10 days be just time off, or is there some way that you feel like you can keep the learning, the instruction going?
Well, what we want to do right now, we're in the process of creating activity packets for all the students so they can access and still be able to work on their skills and provide some resources. We have online resources, but as a organization, we don't have full online capability for all students at this point. So if we delivered that and relied only on that, it will be an equity issue. So we're actually preparing hard packets. The plan is to have those hard packets at least by Monday to have at our food distribution sites. So again, as kids grab and go with their meals, they can also grab an activity packet based on their grade level and be able to begin to do work and stay up on their skills, academic skills, while they're home.
And whether it's online or those activity packets, that coursework is being made available but isn't necessarily required for their grades, right?
Correct. This will not be graded. This is strictly for activities, making sure kids don't have a learning loss.
And for students without internet, there are free hotspots around the area as well and a deal with Comcast, I understand?
Yes, we put the information out, and so thank you to Comcast for doing that for us. Right now, even if you have a cell phone with Wi-Fi capability, you can jump on a hotspot right now for the next, I think it's 30 to 60 days, and it's free, provided by Comcast. So thank you, Comcast, for doing that.
Anthony Hamlet is the superintendent of Pittsburgh Public Schools. I'm curious, as you look ahead, end of year PSSA testing for grades 3-8 usually begins in late April. Keystone exams for high school students typically begins in May. A lot of teachers use this time of year, I know you know, to prep for these tests, which are usually used as benchmarks then to hold schools accountable. Do you have any guidance yet from state or federal leaders about how to address those tests without kids in the classroom?
We don't have that guidance right now, but we have regular updates. So I'm sure that's forthcoming based on if we extend this closure, because we had about 4 weeks before we began to start testing. So we want to get clear guidance from PBE, which they should be providing some this week or early next week at the latest.
What would be most helpful, you know, kind of as you're looking ahead at this situation, what does the Pittsburgh Public Schools, its students, its staff, its teachers, what do they need?
Right now, we need consistency. We need to make sure that we articulate and communicate on a regular basis. Anything information that we get, we want to make sure that we push it out to our families and our staff and our community as well to keep them abreast of the federal mandates, the state mandates, et cetera. But also provide them statistics of what's going on around the nation and in the region as well as it pertains to C-19 or COVID-19.
Does it make you feel better to know that there are so few pediatric patients, kids being affected by this?
Yeah, absolutely it does. First of all, I don't want to see anyone affected by this condition, but it's not hitting our children. And I know sometimes we have some of the most vulnerable children, I know in Pittsburgh, when it comes to low economic status and low poverty students. So medical care would become hard for them to come by. So we want to make sure that we support them in that manner. But yes, that is good news that it's not really attacking the school-age kids.
In guidance sent out earlier this week, you wrote that you hope to keep spring break intact. For now, that's April 6th through 13th for your students and staff. What, in your mind, is the benefit of keeping spring break if you're able?
Right now, it will provide continuity to our schedule in our school day, in our school year, get us back on track to moving toward completion of the school year. But hopefully, again, we'll be able to go back to school. But you never know. This is the fluid situation. We have some superintendents have a phone conference with AASA, which is the National Superintendents Association, and we're going to get updated by the CDC. And the latest the CDC has said about school closures is that they recommend 8 to 20 weeks. So we don't know how that's going to play out. Again, that was just a suggestion from the CDC. We don't know how our governors, our PDE is going to take that up, or they're going to heed that or not. We'll see.
If 8 to 20 weeks is the extreme, you know, from where you sit, what does that even mean? Can you think that far ahead in terms of trying to figure out a school calendar?
Well, what I can tell you that I've told my staff from the beginning, let's plan for a long-term and short-term school closure because we don't know. So we'll rely on our colleagues and having conversations with others around the region and the nation about how we pivot and work together to make change or make this situation to the best of its benefit for our students.
So as you're looking ahead, then, what are next steps? I guess we're in day three of a school closure. What does tomorrow look like? What is next week?
Tomorrow, it'll be on essential staff only into the buildings, like our food service workers and our administration. Other than that, all employees and students will be home. So it'll look like that for the remainder of the closure.
And schools are typically required to complete 180 full days of class time. State officials say neither districts nor students will be penalized if that can't happen this year. But are you worried at all about losing that class time, even if there's no, you know, hard and fast penalty?
Yeah, there's no penalty, but we're definitely concerned about that. You always have this situation where for some of our most vulnerable students, you have what we call a summer slide or summer learning loss. And so that's going to be exacerbated now. And how is that going to affect the outcomes of the learning of our students? So that's something on our mind as well as we try to navigate these uncharted waters right now. How does that look for our students short-term and long-term? What can we do to mitigate that the learning loss that our kids are getting at this point?
You mentioned the regional Allegheny Intermediate Unit. Do you know if there are continued conversations either in that group or other regional superintendents, school administrators like yourself, just trying to navigate these uncharted waters?
Yeah, the AIU3 has, I think, Zoom check-ins every day with the superintendents. And, of course, my district is a little different. It's the second largest in the state, but the largest in the region. So some of our issues and things you have to deal with may be a little different than a smaller school district, but we still learn from each other and throw out ideas and help each other through problems of practice that we have in this current time. So,
and one of those differences, of course, Allegheny County has multiple confirmed cases of COVID-19. A lot of the smaller districts at this point don't. Does that weigh on your mind as well? You know, the fact that COVID-19 has presented itself in our community and been declared positive.
Yes, it weighs on our mind tremendously, and now it gets closer to home. But in that space, how do we make sure that our students, our families, our communities, our faculty and staff are well taken care of to keep their families and community safe?
And what about you, sir? As you look ahead, you know, how are you feeling right now?
Right now, I'm in the mode right now of kind of triage right now because it's so new. But for me, staying focused on the needs of our students, the needs of our faculty and staff, and the needs of our community, that's paramount and in the forefront of my mind on a regular basis.
Anthony Hamlett is the superintendent of Pittsburgh Public Schools. Dr. Hamlett, but thank you so much, and best wishes to the students, teachers, staff, and yourself.
Thank you for giving us this opportunity to come on. Anytime you need us to come on, let us know. We're here, and we want to communicate as best we can, as often as we can, as much as you need us to. Okay? Thank you. We appreciate it.
And we're joined from afar by WESA education reporter Sarah Schneider. So a lot to digest there. Sarah, what were you listening for from PPS Superintendent Anthony Hamlett?
I mean, he said he's in triage, right? And that's so true for most superintendents in districts that are closed right now. They're trying to figure out what to do. They did not have very much time. The governor announced this Friday, and schools are closed Monday. So they're still trying to figure out how to best serve students during this time, and there's still a lot of decisions to be made in the coming days and weeks.
A look behind the curtain for our listeners. Sarah, you were actually out of state when the national fallout from a lot of COVID-19 escalated so quickly last week. How important was it to you as someone who covers this district day to day to hear directly from its leader?
Yeah, it's very important. They had to make decisions very quickly. I was home in Illinois, and Illinois also shut down all schools very quickly. And those superintendents were making the same decisions, right? How are we even going to teach these students? Are we going to try to teach them? Really importantly, a lot of superintendents were thinking about meals and how they're going to feed students. A lot of families rely on schools for, you know, even breakfast and lunch every day. And so Pittsburgh Public Schools did move pretty quickly to make sure that that would happen, that they're open so that families could have those meals every day for the 10 days that it's closed.
How important is that need here in Pittsburgh? You know, Anthony Hamlett talked about being kind of unique, Pittsburgh Public, in the Western Pennsylvania region being so large, having the population that it does. Why is providing food so vital to his population?
Yeah, so a majority of Pittsburgh Public School students are considered economically disadvantaged by the state of Pennsylvania. And so this is critical. It's critical that students were fed. It is challenging for smaller districts that many of their students also qualify for free and reduced meals. It's difficult for those districts to get meals out, though. You know, I spoke to the director of the Pennsylvania Association of School Leaders this week, and he said, you know, these smaller districts are trying to figure out if they even have distribution locations that families can get to easily without, you know, having to get in a car and drive many miles to get those meals. So it's challenging, and if school closure is prolonged, it's going to be difficult.
And as reporters, sometimes it feels like we're, you know, struggling to keep up with the news ourselves. What has it been like for you? We have so many school districts in our region trying to, you know, keep tabs on what the trends are, how people are reacting. What have you heard so far?
Yeah, it's day by day, sometimes hour by hour, what districts are doing. I spoke to the superintendent of Woodland Hills, which is in Allegheny County District, serving students in Swissvale, Braddock, and Turtle Creek. And they're making decisions hour by hour, trying to figure out how they're going to meet the needs of kids, because they're not sure how long schools are going to be closed. You know, his concern is that students might not go back to school, that the school year will basically have ended. So they're trying to figure out how to make sure that students don't lose out on learning time. But he doesn't know if these days will be even counted as instructional days, or they're doing like an online learning platform. But there are students that have an individualized education plan, meaning they're in special education and they need special services. And if they're not meeting those needs of students, then they can't count this time as instructional time. So it's really complicated. There's a lot going on. And I think they're all just trying to work together and figure out what each district is doing and how I can, you know, copy what they're doing to meet the needs of my kids.
Dr. Hamlet said that it could be 8 to 20 weeks, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Is that a surprising number for you? Have you heard anything like that from the State Department of Education?
The State Department of Education has been pretty quiet so far since they made the announcement. I think they're looking to see what other states are going to do. Testing season is coming up, and these tests, while controversial, you know, people have opinions on if standardized testing should even be in schools. But, you know, the reality is they carry a lot of weight. I think a lot of school leaders are really concerned about that. We've heard some requests to have those testing days moved back to later in maybe May, so that teachers have more time to prepare their students.
I can definitely see an anomaly year coming in our state testing data for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot, and I think people are, you know, trying to be really kind to one another right now and try to understand that people haven't had to do this before, and so I think schools are hoping that the state is going to be flexible with this testing mandates.
Well, we'll look forward to your reporting. Sarah Schneider is WESA's education reporter. Sarah, thanks so much.
Thanks, Megan.
And as we said, the news changes fast. Pittsburgh Public has since closed off several district buildings, citing potential exposure to COVID-19 by both individual students and employees. Those locations include an administration building in Oakland, Professional Development Center in the West End, and schools Arsenal K-5, Arsenal 6-8, Brookline, Carmelt, Classical Academy, Fulton, Grandview, Linden, Malines, and Schiller, where grab-and-go lunch will, at least for now, no longer be available. The district says they'll all be deep cleaned during this ongoing closure, and that they're working to find replacement pickup points for hungry students in those areas. I'm Megan Harris. You're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA.
I'm Katie Blackley with the Pittsburgh Almanac. This week in history, U.S. Steel signs an agreement recognizing the Steel Workers Organizing Committee in 1937. The union became the bargaining agent for employees at five of the company's subsidiaries. It meant that workers could earn a $5 a day minimum wage, 40-hour work week, paid vacation, and seniority benefits. Unlike previous industrial unionization attempts, no violence was part of this compromise and led to other steel firms recognizing the union. The Steelworkers Organizing Committee would go on to become United Steelworkers, with headquarters still in the city. That's today's Pittsburgh Almanac.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Megan Harris. Hospitals across Pennsylvania are drastically limiting the use of key protective gear out of fears of a dramatic increase in coronavirus cases could diminish reserves and cause a dangerous shortage. The rationing comes as the State Department of Health maintains it has personal protective equipment available and is working with health systems to make sure they have what they need. But WITF's Brett Schultes reports some experts fear the situation could change rapidly.
The gear includes eye protection, gowns, and most importantly, N95 respirators, which are essential in preventing a healthcare worker from breathing in infectious particles when in close contact with someone who has COVID-19. People rushed out to buy these masks, even though health experts say people who are not sick don't benefit from wearing them.
Yes, this is guidance that also came down from the CDC, recommendations from them.
Mark Ross is vice president of emergency management at the Hospital and Health System Association of Pennsylvania. He says hospitals across the state are employing conservation techniques to save equipment. That includes directing healthcare workers to use less protective surgical masks when normally they'd use N95 respirators.
Doing those conservation techniques help expand our capacity to make those supplies last. If there, you know, is a slowdown or a shortage in the supply chain, and it's good practice.
Ross says very similar demands were put on the supply chain during the 2009 swine flu pandemic, and he notes hospitals and health systems have not yet reached a point where the state should be handing out masks.
And now with COVID-19 on top, those conservation techniques are really paying off to make sure that we do have masks for when we need them.
Dr. Arvind Venkat is president of the Pennsylvania College of Emergency Physicians.
I would say that the most important thing we need right now is for society as a whole to become invested in mitigating this crisis.
He says most hospitals haven't run out of N95 masks or surgical masks, but doctors fear that could soon change with COVID-19 cases multiplying daily.
The danger is going to come up as this illness spreads that we're in danger of really reaching a critical point on these personal protective equipment.
Venka emphasizes people should not panic or hesitate to seek necessary care. He's hoping to see some assistance from state and federal agencies before too many healthcare workers get sick, similar to what has already happened in China and Italy.
If we don't protect ourselves appropriately and become infected and don't realize it, then just like any other person, we can transmit the disease to others as well. So that's why we have to be doubly careful.
State Health Secretary Dr. Rachel Levine has said the Commonwealth has a significant stockpile of equipment, including N95 respirators, and also has access to protective equipment from the CDC. However, Levine declined to answer key questions like how many are available or when hospital workers might get help. Records show the health department was recently approved for $315,000 in funding to buy masks, respirators, and other supplies. In the documents, the agency makes the consequences clear. If it can't place the order, the Commonwealth won't be able to provide personal protection equipment to assist in the defense of the virus. In Harrisburg, I'm Brett Schultes.
And I'm Megan Harris. You're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA.
WYEP celebrates Women's History Month throughout March. Today, find out more about Natalie Merchant. Despite great commercial success, Natalie Merchant has never played the industry game, shunning the role of glamour diva. As the lead singer and primary lyricist for 10,000 Maniacs, she helped the band score 5 Billboard hits. At the peak of its success, eager to create her own music, Merchant left the band for a solo career. Refusing money from the record label, she financed the album herself in order to maintain creative control. Her debut, Tiger Lily, written, produced, and performed by Merchant, sold 5 million copies and spawned 3 Billboard top hits. Natalie Merchant continues to follow her muse, releasing albums that range from pop to traditional folk. A playlist with music from all of WYEP's Women's History Month artists is at WYEP.org/women.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Megan Harris. Getting an accurate count of the nearly 13 million people in Pennsylvania was always going to be a monumental task. Doing so during a global pandemic, well, that's an entirely different challenge. On the line with us is Michael Cook. He's the chief of the Public Information Office for the U.S. Census Bureau. Michael, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on your show, Megan. I really appreciate it. You know, invitations to respond to the 2020 census are in the mail. The census has begun.
No kidding. I want to start with hiring. There have been reports for weeks now that census officials plan to bring on fewer temp workers to knock on doors and help people fill out those forms. But with the spread of the virus, I wondered how that's been going. What's the status here in Western Pennsylvania and across the nation?
Well, as of today, 6.5 million people have responded to the census. We're carefully monitoring the situation and working with local and national health authorities, but we do plan to conduct a complete and accurate count. We have reached our benchmark of recruiting 2.7 million applicants. So when we do get to the phase where we have to knock on the door for people who haven't responded, we do anticipate that we'll be able to get a complete and accurate count. What does that mean? That means that if you get an invitation in the mail, we ask that you respond. And it's easy to respond, 10 easy questions.
So if people respond online, by phone, via mail, in advance of those workers maybe knocking on their doors, does that mean that you can help mitigate, you know, our friends and neighbors in our community coming to our door and asking us, hey, remember that form? Please make sure you get it filled out.
When you get invited to respond in the mail between now and this Friday, going online and responding or calling our phone and responding by the phone or sending back that questionnaire does mean that you can respond to the 2020 census without having somebody come to your door.
Will you still want people to go door to door if COVID-19 is still as big a threat as it is right now?
we're adapting and working with local public health officials to ensure that we are practicing social distancing as we interact and get a complete and accurate count. Responding is important. It shapes your future and your community for the next 10 years. Billions of dollars in public funding is distributed annually and locally to communities based on a complete and accurate count, as well as political representation. The seats in the House of Congress are appropriated based on a complete and accurate count.
When was counting supposed to be completed?
July 31st is our deadline for conducting the 2020 census and getting responses from residents across the country.
I wondered, the Bureau itself developed a task force to deal with some of these challenges that are being posed by the novel coronavirus. How has it impacted your operations?
Some of our operations have been moved. For instance, when you talk about college students, we have planned to, in the early part of April, to start conducting a count of college students across the country. We have moved that later to mid-April, but we have a contingency plan, $2.1 billion in place, that allows us to hire more individuals if needed, allows us to move our offices if needed, as well as send communications, mailers, and additional questionnaires to those places impacted by COVID-19. We have an internal task force that is monitoring the situation, working with local and national health authorities to ensure that the work that we're doing at the local level is not putting hurt, harm, or danger into the lives of our staff and or the residents, but also making sure that we conduct the 2020 census on time and turn over the population counts December 31st.
For some of those harder-to-reach groups, like older people, people who are undocumented, you mentioned college students, might it be easier at all to reach them with so many of them bunkering down at home?
The current situation with people practicing social distancing does allow us to explain and to emphasize that responding to the 2020 census has never been easier. Being that you can respond online or by phone while you're at home is key and critical, and it's a message that we're trying to get out and working with our thousands of partners across the country that help us get that message to those local communities is invaluable and highly important.
Michael Cook is a spokesperson for the U.S. Census Bureau. Michael, thanks so much, and stay safe out there.
Thank you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Megan Harris. Allegheny County has been implementing new restrictions almost daily to limit the spread of COVID-19 since the first cases were confirmed last week. The Confluence's Kevin Gavin spoke yesterday about those limitations and what might still be coming.
In the last week, the county has really had to confront what this pandemic looks like locally and how to, as they say, flatten the curve. Do you think actions like limiting group sizes and voluntary business closures came soon enough?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, the one thing you learn about a pandemic is early on the reaction by people is described as overly alarmist. And then afterwards, people wonder if it has been enough. And that's one of the issues. We were actually one of the very earliest to do this. The federal government was way behind and still hasn't really done a lot in, you know, other parts of the country. It's interesting that local government, like here in Allegheny County, has been really taking the lead over some of the things that others have done.
You declared a county emergency last Thursday. Did you already know that the first cases of COVID-19 were confirmed but not announced at that point, which happened a couple of days later?
No, we did not. We really didn't know until that Saturday that we announced it. I think we announced it on a Thursday. We anticipated that there would be, just because of what was happening in other parts of the country and even in the eastern part of our state. So we were not surprised when it ultimately came, but at that point we still hadn't had a positive case.
What does the emergency declaration allow you to do to maybe expedite?
Well, it sends a lot of signals about how the seriousness of the issue, and it allows us at the county level, at the county government level, to speed up some procurement for things that we might need, whether they be materials or whether they're services that it would be needed to protect the public, whether it be special materials like masks and ventilators and test kits and things like that, or if we need to hire additional personnel or contract with medical personnel, you know, without going through the normal 30, 60, 90-day bidding process that you would do on a normal construction project to rebuild a bridge or to redo a road. This allows the county manager because of public safety issues to be able to move much more quickly.
Are you having trouble getting the equipment, whether it's masks or other items that you actually need?
Yeah, there's been a delay in doing that. That's certainly been the case, and I think we've seen that when it comes to testing. Now, we brought together UPMC, AHN, Heritage Valley, and St. Clair, and they've been working on that very diligently. But unfortunately, the federal government, the FDA, was not providing approval for some of the materials that they needed to use. I understand today for the first time that the federal government is basically saying, okay, states can now provide that authorization and that certification on testing and materials and equipment, that type of thing. So that should speed things along. Luckily for us here in Allegheny County and in Western Pennsylvania, we've got some of the best healthcare providers, healthcare personnel, folks who have been dedicating their lives to medicine and public health. So we're certainly going to be in a better place than other places around the country might be.
It's The Confluence. I'm Kevin Gavin, talking with Allegheny County Executive Rich Fitzgerald about the county's efforts to stem the outbreak of COVID-19 in our region. One of the most vulnerable populations is our seniors. So what steps are being taken at the Kane Senior Centers?
Well, we're having no visitors, for example. That's one of the things. People can't come in and out and visit anymore. The only exception would be at the end of life issues where somebody's in very, very grave condition, that kind of an exception. So our workers are trained. They practice all of the protective measures that they can do. And one of the things, not just the seniors at the Canes, but seniors in general, you know, we're encouraging, you know, young people who love their grandparents, we know that, not to go visit them during the next couple of weeks. We're asking them, you know, do it on FaceTime, do it on Skype, call them. But, you know, we don't want to put our senior population and people with, you know, underlying health conditions at risk. You know, nursing homes in general, not just the Canes, but the governor gave that order the other day that all nursing homes across the Commonwealth are off limits for visitation. So the one thing I like to say is how we do well in fighting this epidemic is Pittsburghers usually come together. Well, the best way we can come together now is literally by staying apart.
You called on non-essential businesses to close. The governor urged them to do so. Are you checking up to see who is complying? And if not, maybe contact them and try to convince them?
At this point, most have been very, very cooperative. But I'm assuming as time goes on, if there are some that are not complying, one of the things in the governor's order was to give local law enforcement, local permitting agency, the ability to go in and find people. Now, obviously, we don't want to throw people in jail. That's one of the things we're not wanting to do. I mean, if people violate certain instances. So, you know, I think most people at this point are being very cooperative. You know, the governor has given this order, and I think he was absolutely very proactive in doing so. But he's also, you know, as he said, he's not going to send in the National Guard or the state police to turn it into a police state. You know, this may change as time goes on. You know, there's other states that have done some more mandatory quarantining. We've seen some of that in San Francisco, but at this point, we don't see the need to do that right now.
For those businesses who have closed up shop for a couple of weeks, what are you doing? What can you do to help the owners and their workers as they land in uncertain financial situations?
Well, one of the things that has happened, and some of this has come out with Judge Clark, for example. President Judge Clark declared a judicial emergency. So, you know, we want to make sure that people who have difficulty maybe paying their rent or their mortgages, you know, stay on execution orders of eviction or possession of residential properties. There's also with the governor's office in DCED, Department of Community and economic development loan programs to allow, you know, businesses to get some of the capital they might need to get through some of these difficult times. Our congressional delegation came together, Democrats and Republicans, and I really applaud our four congressional leaders, you know, two from each party, Kelly, Reschenthaler, Doyle, and Lamb, came together to pass paid sick leave for 2 weeks and FMLA for 12 weeks. So there's some things coming about and tax credits for the businesses to provide those. So there are programs that are out there. We know this is not going to be easy. We know this is going to have a lot of an impact on an awful lot of businesses as well as individuals. You know, we're hoping to, you know, do everything we can to minimize that. Certainly some of the programs that are coming out, our federal government is talking about a huge stimulus package, and I hope it's targeted in a way to really help some of our small businesses and individuals who will be most impacted by this this pandemic.
It's The Confluence. I'm Kevin Gavin, talking with Allegheny County Executive Rich Fitzgerald about the county's efforts to stem the outbreak of COVID-19 in our region. What about medical workers? Can we expect any additional resources like masks, respirators to arrive anytime soon?
Well, we're hoping to do that. One of the things that has happened with the medical field is Dr. Bogan, in accordance with the American Dental Association, for example, has requested non-emergency dental services be delayed. Obviously, if somebody's got severe pain, a root canal, things like that, you got to go in. But for like the normal teeth cleaning and checkup, you know, putting those things off. Dr. Bogan and Secretary of Health, State Secretary of Health Levine, and other health officials also put out a directive today imploring our healthcare providers to cancel all elective surgeries so that we have enough, so that we're planning enough bed space and personnel availability to treat what we anticipate is going to be an increase in folks that are going to need treatment and possibly ventilators and those type of things. So that's one of the things I think a lot of these our healthcare providers as well as our health department are trying to get enough material. I can't say that we have enough yet, and I think it's a national issue that really wasn't done by our friends at the FDA and some of the other folks who really provide the certification, if you will, to allow the testing, allow the protective material, the masks, the ventilators, all the materials and equipment that we are going to need as a community to take care of people if this becomes much, much higher in the future.
Allegheny County was one of the first five to be designated as mitigation counties in Pennsylvania, which leads to stepped up efforts to stop the spread of the virus. What additional steps are you authorized to take that you might still be considering and maybe hope you don't have to take?
Well, some of these things could become even more mandatory. You could probably at some point, if the governor and our health professionals make some recommendations on quarantining and things like that. I don't think we're anywhere near there yet. But what I've been relying, Kevin, has been on the health professionals. So for someone like me, we do rely on our medical experts to give us the kind of advice and set the kind of policies that make sense. And I know Governor Wolf does the same thing with his medical experts, Secretary Levine and others. And I think that's really what we need to do at this time. We need to rely on our medical experts who understand the potential that this thing could be, certainly from what we've seen in other countries, Italy and other places. And we want to make sure that doesn't happen to us in a severe way.
Allegheny County Executive Rich Fitzgerald, thanks so much.
Kevin, good to be with you. And let's all continue to work together, and we'll get through this together as Pittsburghers.
That was The Confluence's Kevin Gavin talking to Allegheny County Executive Rich Fitzgerald. And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. A reminder, keep up to date on how COVID-19 is affecting our nation, our state, and our neighbors. Go to WESA's live blog, updated throughout the day at WESA.fm. If you missed anything from today's show, or you'd like to catch up on a previous episode, visit WESA.fm/confluence or try us out wherever you get your favorite podcasts. It Takes a Village to bring you the confluence this week. Love and gratitude to Russ Lloyd, Tom Hurley, Jason Price, and Helen Wigger. Kylie Kosinski is the engineer and producer of the confluence. Kevin Gavin is still driving the boat from across town. I'm Megan Harris. Until next time, we're thinking of you and all the good news yet to come.